Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I'm your host, Jason Verlinde, the editor of the Fretboard Journal magazine. And on today's podcast, I am extremely excited to be talking to the one, the only Matt Sweeney of Chavez, Superwolves, Guitar Moves fame, and so much more. For those of you who don't know, Matt is an in-demand guitarist and producer out of New York City. He played on the very last two posthumous Rick Rubin-produced Johnny Cash American albums 5 and 6. He played on the Cat Power covers record. He played guitar on Neil Diamond's Home Before Dark and so much more. And around a decade ago, he partnered with Vice on this insanely influential video interview series called Guitar Moves. This show predated so many YouTube guitar interview shows, and Matt was, and probably still is, the closest thing we have to an Anthony Bourdain for guitar. And by that, I mean he could hang and interview with folks like Blake Mills, Keith Richards, Billy Gibbons, James Williamson, Jay Maskus, and so many others. He could play with them. And he'd get these pivotal, sometimes elusive figures talking and sharing riffs. It was super cool. The show was way ahead of its time. It was edited beautifully. And I'm pretty sure he turned a ton of people on to the playing of Blake Mills and others for the first time. And then the show ended and it kind of just disappeared from the internet. I'm happy to say Matt has brought Guitar Moves back from the dead. He just got his own YouTube channel that he controls now. We talk all about it. I'll include a link in the show notes. He just shared the Keith Richards episode last week, and he's going to start filming new episodes. We will be having him in the Fretboard Journal in 2024, I think in our 55th issue. Subscribe now, and you will definitely get it. And I'm hoping, fingers crossed, if I'm lucky, I can convince him to come to our Chicago Fretboard Summit in August. I say this once in a while, but I think this is the first of many conversations we'll be sharing with Matt Sweeney. I love talking to him. I was so glad to hear he's into what I'm doing over here at the Fretboard Journal, and I hope you enjoy it. The big announcement on my end here at the Fretboard Journal is our 53rd issue is now mailing. I'm staring at a whole pile of copies in my office. They're mailing to subscribers right now. We're working overtime trying to get these out in batches. I gotta be honest, for 18 years, I've put out this super eclectic guitar magazine, unlike anything you've ever seen. We've got legends, we've got experimentalists, we've got bluegrass legends and jazz and indie rock and folk musicians and everything in between in every edition. And this issue, issue 53, might just be our most eclectic yet, but it's also one of my favorites. Longtime friend of the magazine, Ben Harper, is back talking about Wide Open Light, his 2023 singer-songwriter album. We also talk about Dumble and a bunch more. Fran Blanche of Frantone Electronics is in this issue, as is Joanna Sternberg, the incredible singer-songwriter who put out one of my favorite records of the year, and it happened to be produced by Matt Sweeney, today's podcast guest. We've also got features on Robbie Basho's 12-string guitar, the history of the Gibson L5, Kate Wolf, so much more. Subscribe if you haven't yet, fretboardjournal.com/subscribe. It means the world to me. We are a reader-supported magazine. That's how we're able to do all these crazy, kooky, eclectic podcasts where you get to discover great musicians, and we get to make a magazine that's as unique as the Fretboard Journal is. So as always, we have a few brands that are sponsoring the podcast that do help support us, and they match our values, and we just love working with them. Mike and Mike's Guitar Bar here in Seattle. Everybody should be following them on Instagram. I'm actually talking to Mike Ball on this podcast in a few weeks. They've got this incredible repair shop. They've got an incredible array of like 800 instruments on Reverb at any one time, acoustic and electric, funky Japanese guitars, American blue chip guitars, you name it, the whole gamut, they have it. We're also brought to you by Stringjoy Strings. You can use the discount code FRETBOARD when you check out for 10% off of your first order of Stringjoy Strings. They got mandolin strings now. And speaking of mandolins, our friends over on Peghead Nation have a dozen or so of my favorite musicians giving online lessons across a wide variety of instruments, including mandolins and guitars. It's a truly cool thing. You can get your first month free or $20 off of any annual subscription with the promo code FRETBOARD when you check out. And our pals at Isotope and Native Instruments are offering big discounts this holiday season on everything they do. check out all their offerings. There's a link in the show notes. And as you hopefully know, if you cringe when I read these ads, we have a Patreon for this podcast where you get bonus content and you get podcast episodes with no ads. I'll include a link to that in the show notes. It's a great way to support my family and what I do and all of this crazy eclectic coverage that I'm guessing you love if you've made it this far. And now, here is my chat with the incredible Matt Sweeney. It's a fun one. Matt, thanks for talking to me. This is exciting for me. I've been wanting to do this for a while.
It's an honor, and it's cool. I don't get to talk guitar very often, believe it or not.
Well, and I want to start off by thanking you for something that's like not really guitar nerdy, but that Joanna Sternberg record. We have them in our new issue of the Fretboard Journal, and that album meant so much to a lot of us, so thank you.
Well, yeah, that's awesome. That's so cool. That's so cool. Yeah, and also, I mean, this is why Fretboard Journal is cool. I mean, to me, that's it. I mean, like Joanna is a guitar player that's inspiring and mind-blowing, and like fucking watching Joanna play, it's sick. It is sick, you know? And like, it was really exciting from, you know, hearing recordings of Joanna, and then the songs are so powerful, the singing's so powerful, and the arrangements are so powerful, but it's like gnarly, thumb-driven, hard rocking, almost all of it, you know? It's really interesting, because, you know, they're a bass player, you know? They're a stand-up bass player, you know? Like, that's really their thing. And weirdly, and I didn't know any of this stuff until we started recording, you know? Like the day before I did some Googling. I was like, oh, wait, what? They went to New School for a full pop scholarship for stand-up bass? I was like, huh, you know? And then, so it was such a cool reveal, you know what I mean? But I think that the way Joanna plays guitar is like exactly the kind of stuff that gets me excited. And I feel like, you know, on this like elemental level, you hear it and you're like, oh my God, what is that? How do you do that? You know what I mean? Like how is that possible? You know, like, yeah. That's awesome. Love that you did that. That's so
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we could talk about that for an hour, but
I know.
And a new track just dropped. I don't know if you had any part in that, but that was cool to see.
Yeah. And it's crazy. Joanna's got a backlog of just kind of demo material, like a lot of it, like a lot of stuff. So it's really, the future is kind of wide open. I'm really interested to see where Joanna takes her own genius ass, you know. Yeah. It's like,
so what's a, I mean, I won't even say a day in the life, because I'm sure they're all different, but like, what for you does a typical week or month look like? How much of your time is doing production stuff? How much is just pure, I'm a guitar for hire? How do you fill your time?
That's a great question. I just went for a run. I try to go for a run in the mornings. It's totally different. I was thinking about this. It's like, how the fuck did I make it to my 50s without a real crazy? And I, you know, it really wildly varies. Like, you know, was it yesterday? Like, I mean, or this week I was guitar guy, you know, I went into the studio and got to work with Mark Ronson on a thing, you know, and that was as a guitar dude, you know what I mean? But it's also, it's really fun to work with somebody where it's like, okay, we're redoing a song or we're trying, like, I think, I don't, it's different. I don't know. And then I just made the last record that I made, I was sort of producing, but it's a band record, you know? And then like I will basically, before then I did a thing for Fender where I was doing something with Billy Gibbons. It's I'll just say kind of yes to anything. I can't believe anybody fucking asked me to do anything. So I'll be like, okay. Because so there really is not a typical day. It's not really divided up into anything. I don't have a manager who's got a big, like long docket of things for me to do. It's, I think, like any other free, I'm like a freelancer. I think it started to make more sense to me when I, as a New Yorker, when I just started talking to artists and photographers, like non-musicians, and I'd be like, or fucking even my stepdad, who's a lawyer, you know, my stepdad the other day is like, do you ever, and he's incredible. He's a very successful lawyer. And he's like, do you ever kind of sit around waiting for the phone to ring? Says my stepdad. I was like, yeah, you know, and he's like, yeah, you know, me too. he's like, isn't it funny when nothing's happening? You feel like you never did anything in your life. Like when you don't get a call and send. I was like, so, I mean, for sure, I think with the path that I've taken, because I don't have a boss, because I'm not in a band, because I work on such a broad spectrum. So there are some days where I'm like, oh my God, do I do anything? You know, like, is the phone ever going to ring again? It sometimes feels very real for me because I've done so many things and it's projects, you know what I mean? You get like hired to look like project things. So I guess that's a long-winded answer thing that it's still fairly chaotic, but okay. in a handleable way. It's a good question. I wish I had a better answer. I'm super grateful that I'm somehow fucking making a living doing this, and I get to work on very specific projects that speak to me and that I feel like I could be helpful on, you know what I mean? And I'm not I was just lucky. People asked me to do stuff, you know, that's how it started. You know what I mean? Like even with Chavez, it was like Clay was like, we should do a band. You know what I mean? But like, and even my first band was somebody be like, oh, we should do a band. Even though, like, I want to be, you know what I mean? Like, so I'm not.
And where were you at? Where were you at in life when that happened?
When somebody said we should do a band?
When Chavez, yeah.
Clay, I was fucked. I had decided that I wasn't going to do music anymore. my first band was like, to me, it was such a failure and blah, blah, blah. And I dropped out of college and I had actually roadied for Clay's band in some sort of just like, hey, I want to be around music. Maybe I'm not meant to, maybe the band thing isn't for me or whatever. So I met Clay I knew him through mutual friends, and my band had broken up and I needed a job. And he's like, well, we actually have this like tour where we have tour support. We need to take somebody out as a guitar tech. You want to do it? It turned out I made more money than the people in the band, which happens a lot. Back then I was like, we have tour support. You know, we get to rent all this stuff and hire people in the band at the end of the day. It's like, holy shit, we didn't make any money. That's how I met Clay. And again, he asked me to do something. So it's like, yeah.
When you said you were like done, you swore off making or trying to be a musician, were you like going to totally get out of the music world? Did you have like backup plan? No. Okay.
Well, like my shit wasn't together enough. I don't know, whatever. Like it just wasn't, I wanted to be around music just as much as I wanted to play it. You know what I mean? Meaning I was like, well, I don't know what else to do. So I'll get a job working for, I don't know, some aspect of the music biz, you know what I mean? And so, I worked at CMJ, you know, the College Music Journal.
Yeah.
It was all musicians, you know, who like worked like that. That was also kind of more of a thing, was like, you'd be in a band and then you'd kind of have a music adjacent job, not just necessarily being a bartender, which is the other kind of gig, you know, but like, so, I'd sort of not thought that my musical ideas were really worth anything. And then Clay was like, oh, we should do a band. And so that's how that started. But I was very much like my dad's basement in New Jersey when the germ of Chavez got started. And then I was like trying to figure out how I could get a job in New York and be in New York. That was sort of like where I was at. I was sort of definitely up in the air and not knowing what to do. And then also like enough of a fan where, I was playing bass. Like for example, somebody was like, oh, I heard you play bass. I was like, yeah, I do. That's not my thing. But I didn't say that. I was like, sure. Yeah. I play bass. I was playing bass in a noise band, or a really noisy, post Glenn Branca band called Wider. And James Lowe from Live Skull was in that band. So I kind of did a thing where I like was like, okay, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. That last band was a disaster. I will just sort of say yes to what people, you know, like see what happens kind of thing. And then the Chavez thing developed really slowly and was really nice because Clay was like, well, let's try to do something to keep ourselves interested. And we just played as two guitar players for like months and months. We would just be in a room and try to come up with something that was interesting to us. We're like, let's do something stringy. I think that's what Clay just kept on saying. It's like, let's do something having to do with stringy stuff, you know? And then James Lowe, who I was playing in this band with, was like, oh, what do you, you know, like, I think he heard, I don't know what it was. He was just like, oh, it's interesting that you're still playing with that guy. You're still doing guitar stuff. What are you doing? You know? And then I was like, well, you want to jam? And then that's how James got involved. And then I took it really seriously because it was like, wow, James Lowe he was in fucking Swans and he was in fucking Live Skull. And he's like this completely unique drummer. And again, I was like, I cannot believe this guy. Me and Clay were like, I can't believe he thinks this is like, he's paying attention to us even, you know, like that he wants to hang, you know? So like, I guess, yeah, it seems in general, my thing has been, I'm less of a, you know, whatever you call it, a leader.
You're the accidental guitarist, yeah, or something.
It's like, you know, this guy's kind of tall. He seems like he's into it. Let's ask him.
Did the production element or your role as a producer end up happening that sort of same way?
Yeah, again, completely surprising because I fucking never liked the recording process at all. I struggled with it. Again, this is my first band. I don't know, like a lot of people, if you're lucky enough to play music, your first band is like a band that you make with your friends in high school and all the nonsense happens. And so I really didn't like making records. I just always felt like I fucked it up every time. And then Chavez was such an intense band that it wasn't fun making those records, but it was like, I was very happy with the results of it, you know? And that was cause it was such a group effort. And I was sort of like I was the front guy, but that was like Clay being like, you have to be the front guy. You fucking do this. You know, he was kind of like, I was still kind of resistant in some ways. It's really surprising that I fell into making records. Cause it's like my favorite thing to do now, but I still don't record at home. I don't I never four tracked. I never was, I don't know about gear. I don't know how to run Pro Tools. But I definitely know that I can make that, like making records is something that I think I'm pretty good at, you know, like, and that surprises me still that I fell into that. Cause I love listening to records and I think I'm good at performances, but I'm trying to remember who first asked me to produce a record, but it was after I'd made a few, you know, I was making records with Will Oldham that like sort of opened me up to different ways of doing things and stuff. And once I started working with Will, it was something I never thought that I'd do ever. Like I didn't know what a capo was, you know what I mean? Like there's like, I, you know, and I loved English. I was super into English folk stuff and all this stuff, but I thought it was utterly unobtainable. You know what I mean? Like the idea we're picking and like, there's like, no, like what, you know, like John Renbourn, yeah, right. You're like, okay, you can't fucking touch that shit. And I loved it for what it was. And then it was my friend Sam who got into finger picking. He was like, dude, you got to fucking this finger picking shit. It's doable. You could do it. It's going to change everything. And that was like this giant jump. I guess it was like, getting to do things that I didn't think I knew how to do, you know what I mean? And the finger picking thing really kind of, I was surprised that I was able to do it. And that totally opened up everything that the way that I think about everything, I think was because of the change that I had from just that you could pick up a stupid guitar and instead of going like this, because I feel like most rock guitar players are actually terrified of doing that. Like I know that was like, there was like a whole blind spot of like, well, yeah, right. That's the finger picking stuff. But anyway, I want to rock out. It's going to be good because you can't even for me, I just couldn't fucking fathom it, you know? And I think that like there was a really big value in my friend saying, no, it's doable. And like, just start thinking about guitar in a completely different way. You know what I mean? And that's, I guess with everything, even with making records, it's the same thing. It's like, it doesn't have to be this one way. There's other ways of doing it. It's like approach it and sort of being aware of how elements, I don't know. It's a long, I don't, it's funny that I make records because It wasn't something that I planned on doing. Absolutely not. No, when, I sucked at it.
Do you know when exactly that moment was when you were into British folk and you were like, here's me trying to play a song finger picking?
It was, it's funny. There was actually, there was absolutely a thing where like a lot of people, like hearing John Fahey was like a thing, you know, sure. Like it really hit me. And I think, you know, the weigh in was like Nick Drake. And then, you know, so you get into the finger picky stuff, English folk stuff. And then Fahey really, really like smashed me. Mm-hmm. And I guess Sam shows me some finger picking patterns, but I do remember there's this, I had like a really clear thing. I was like, oh wait, you know, like this stuff sounds really easy. The whole idea is to make it sound like it's not hard. And that's really fucking hard to do. But I think if I fucking get this finger picking thing down, it's all about just making it sound good in a way and not making it sound difficult. So, yeah. And it was like a real thing. It was like, oh shit. If I could do this, that means it could just be me by myself and like a drummer. And this is funny. I was really into the idea of a two-piece. And at that point, Chavez wasn't doing anything, but I was still playing with James all the time. And I was like, holy shit. Like, you could, like I could do finger picking stuff and, you know, like, and it could just be this thing. I was really keen on it and kind of, I'd be interested to hear what the fuck me and James were up to, because we played for a couple of years, just like messing around with this idea of like,
were you acoustic or were you playing plugged in? Yeah.
Electric and just like with it, you know, like tuning the E string down to an A string, mm-hmm. you're down to a low A, you know, and then pedaling on that stuff. There's like a whole bunch of bullshit you could do with that. That's kind of cool. But like, that was like this big, that just changed everything for me, you know? And the way that Sam had put it was like, you know, he's like, you know, that whole idea of somebody sitting around being able to play by themselves for hours on a porch, just getting fucking wasted, you know, by themselves and they feel great. He's like, that whole dream, he's like, that's finger picking. If you do that, you can do that. You know, like, that was Sam's pitch.
Who is Sam? What's his last name?
Sam. He's in a band called Supreme Dicks. Who are worth looking up. And he wasn't a writing member of that band. But I met him in that way where they were a band out of Western Massachusetts, they started at Hampshire College, and all my buddies went to Hampshire College. A bunch of my buddies went to Hampshire College. So I met this guy, Sam. And Sam was as into music as we were, and he was the first one of us who like learned a Mississippi John Hurt picking pattern. And to this day, we're still close. We still talk a lot and stuff. And he's a criminal defense attorney. You know what I mean? Like he doesn't care about performing at all. But he's like a monstrously good player, and like no friend. Or he's the guy who had the big impact on me, and he was the guy you are going to do this. You're going to get this, you know, and so
that's so cool. And it's so cool that it happened to you, like after you had already been on the road with Chavez and like you were a professional guitarist.
I had like a thought, obsessively thought about music all my fucking life and all this shit. And so I thought I had a sort of a thing and it was like difficult, you know, it was all difficult, my view of things. And it was like the finger picking thing was the big way in. And that's like with the fucking guitar moves thing that literally all the fucking show is really just like trying to get somebody to finger pick. It's kind of like the low key, like what it's about. It's if there's an agenda, it's that, you know, and hopefully it never gets said. And I think I do end up talking and saying the same shit over and over again, but like, it's just such a way in for people. It really, you know, it's a way in for somebody who's like enmeshed in guitar playing and is thinking about, you know, like who really cares. I feel like most fucking guitar players haven't played that way. Yeah. That's crazy.
Going back to, you know, you sort of becoming this accidental guitarist and then an accidental producer, you've been on some pretty heavy, like as a guitarist, you've been on some pretty heavy sessions, you know, the Rick Rubin stuff, like Johnny Cash and Neil Diamond. Do you ever go into those, or did you ever go into those and like go, oh, that's what a producer, that's what this kind of producer does versus like how you'd been producing records?
Yeah. I mean, and I got to say, I learned so much from Rick because he was from Rick Rubin, because he was the guy who was like started asking me to play on Rick. You know, that's how I got into the thing of being a session guy, you know, and again, like what? Gun for hire. What are you talking? Like, I never, ever, I was like the last guy that I thought would ever be that guy, you know? And, but seeing how Rick makes records, or the records that I worked on with him, which is a lot, it was cool. Like seeing what a producer does, you know, and it was just, it's hands-on. It's like, it was like, oh, right. You're like a member of the band, but you're not, you know, you're not playing, but your thing matters, and you're determining what the what it sounds like and how it's played, you know, and you're there to encourage and shit. I learned so much from Rick, like so much, and the idea of letting things happen, you know what I mean, and listening, actually really being focused and really listening and kind of sort of having it, hearing everything and being able to. Yeah, like all the stuff that I had never concerned myself with because I was freaking out so much. I don't know why, actually, that in this like terrifyingly high pressure situation that I was utterly unprepared for. It was actually, you know, I've said it before. I show up for this Rick Rubin session. It's fucking Tom Petty's band. You
know? Okay.
It's like and Ben Montench. I'm just like, you know, what the fuck am I doing here? You know? And like, cause I have no idea, you know, what I'm doing, you know? And before we went into track, I just said to Rick, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. So like, I don't want to fuck up these takes, you know, do you? He goes, look, you're isolated. We could always hit a race. Don't worry about it. Well, and he goes, you're isolated. We can always hit a race. And somehow that was, you're isolated. We can always hit a race. Was like, absolutely like a weird, like, okay, well, shit. Thanks. Okay. You know, like, so I won't ruin this, you know, like, and I'm here because I'm supposed to throw ideas and, you know, like, and that worked for me. And somehow it made me really able to do my nonsense, you know, and get away with it.
What was the first session? Remind me.
It was for Johnny Cash American 5, you know, which was Johnny Cash in his, when he was dying, recorded a bunch of songs with Jack Clement and some other friends and Dave Ferguson for Rick to finish with the use. That was like part of their deal, you know, and they like, it was like unbelievably heavy situation to walk into, you know? And so they sat on it for a couple of years and everybody was sad. Then they were like, well, we got to do this record. So it was like an obligation on Rick's part and on Dave Ferguson's part, who was Johnny Cash's like mentor or his engineer and kind of his dude. They had to do this record, you know? And so they were doing it with everybody who they'd worked with before. And I was the fucking new guy walking into this situation and trying to put it all, even just to fathom that is pretty hard to grasp, you know, like, which is like, okay, so it's going to be Johnny Cash's voice. He's recorded these songs. He knew he was going to die. He knew that it was going to be played on. So everything's wiped out. It's like a click track and his voice. You know, and we'd listen to it one with like a guitar and then we'd figure out the chords, write down the chords. Again, I'd never done any of this shit. I didn't know about the number system that like one for five and all that stuff. So I was like, oh my God, you know, like, okay, we hear the song. Okay, what should we do? Try this. And then maybe somebody would have a guitar and play along. Oh yeah, let's do that. And then I had a guitar in my hand. So I'd start just doing my finger picking thing. Great, let's do that. Then go in and do it. Oh, you know, like it was this wild thing live, just cutting tracks live to Johnny Cash's voice, and it worked really, 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 really well. And it all, that was my fucking complete immersion into the whole thing, you know, like, and I, it was, you know, it was really wild. Cause again, I had initially was just like, wait, Johnny Cash is dead. They're still making records. What the fuck is this? You know what I mean? Like just my sort of snotty attitude of like, wait, what is this, some sort of, you know, and then it was explained to me what the assignment was. Yeah. So that's all I knew, was that like, I really couldn't fuck this one up. Like,
what, how did you even know what guitar to bring? Or did they tell you?
I just didn't bring a guitar. That was my move. I was like, well, I guess it's going to be Rick Rubin's studio. I've seen pictures of these studios. There's like 5,000 fucking guitars. And also I was like, because I didn't know what to do and I didn't know what to bring. So I figured I'll just bring my own ass and there will be some nice acoustic guitars there. What, again, I really came with like a completely blank slate, which I didn't think I was being that clever. I really was just sort of being honest, but apparently people were kind of impressed that I showed up with nothing. Like, but you know, cause it's like, who the fuck am I?
It's like, what did Rick hear in you? Like, what was that? Why of all the guitarists in the universe did he go like, we got to get Matt out here?
It was the Super Wolf album.
Okay.
That was it for him. He heard that record. He heard it before it came out. And he called me up and said like the nicest things anybody's ever said and just said, would you be available to work on records? And again, that's how it started. I was like, yeah, sure. And then like later that day, I get a call from his office. Are you available to work on Johnny Cash? You know? And I was like, I think actually my line was, I'm assuming these are overdubs, was my line. And then this pause, Mr. Cash recorded 25 songs to be completed after this day. You know, I was like, yeah. Oh, you know, but then that was my way into the whole fucking thing, as far as it was total immersion. And it was like, okay, I get this. This is, I've been approved to improvise in a live situation, you know, because this producer really believes that I'm going to add something to this. And it's all sort of finger picky. It's in the zone of this music that I just have like figured out how to do, because the Super Wolf record was a big writing jump for me. Like writing that music and figuring out how to play and how to do all this stuff was like, that was like me figuring out what my shit was after everything, I guess. That to me, that record, which is fucking, like, I was like in my early 30s when I got all that shit together. That still kind of remains my, like, if you want to know what I can do and what I like doing, this is the kind of music that I make, and this is how I play guitar, and this is like most of what I've learned is in that kind of stuff, you know. So and Rick was really and remains incredibly complimentary about that music. Like, he really, really likes that music, and he really, really likes that approach. So that's my scam. And again, and the scam is like play, like finger picked electric guitar, I think is more or less what the scam is. But I like, yeah.
I think the real question is, as a producer, how many times have you used Rick Rubin's line of like, we can always erase it with other artists?
Sometimes it's fun. You know, it kind of all depends, you know, like, I think the band, there's a band called Country Westerns who I love producing, and I like pushing, I sort of like pushing Joey in a way, like where I could kind of do that sort of like a fun push of like, you're leaving money on the table, man. You know, like you could, you know, like, or just like the sense of humor of like, look, you can do this and you can't fuck this up, you know, like you're here to do you and stuff. But I don't use it that often.
Okay.
Because usually people aren't as insecure as I was, because I think a lot of times when people get in going, I don't know, like it was a tall order.
Yeah.
that I hadn't planned on walking into.
I've always wondered, like, as a producer, like, you basically become a member of the band for like an entire album cycle. But then sometimes bands will hire the same producer over and over again. Sometimes it's like a one and done thing. Mm-hmm. Do you hope that they'll call you back, or are you like, I left it all here?
Well, that's a great question. I think that it can be a really cool relationship. Ideally, it is like a band relationship where, and you know, and you're the fucking maraca player, you know, or not. I mean, that's a but you're the extra person who is affecting things. And the question is, well, do they still want that experience? You know what I mean? And clearly there's lots of examples of really good runs, you know, and it works really, really well for some producers, and bands have great long relationships and sometimes not. So I guess I'm always hoping that they'd want to work with me again, of course, you know what I mean? But it's also the idea, Daniel Schlett, who's the engineer that I work with a lot, just, you know, said it so well about what your responsibility is to making a record, which is like, what happens today, like, is going to affect this other person's life, like, you know, for the next 2 years, you know what I mean? Like either very much or not at all, but whatever it is, like there's a lot of consequence about this time spent right now. And for this artist, this person, you know, like I can walk away from it. This person is going to be committed to living with this thing representing them and stuff. And that's, you know, and that's a lot, you know, but I keep that in mind, you know what I mean? I think really more than anything else is this idea of like how valuable this person's time is today, right now in this place. And how do I make them not freak out about that? How do I just make this available time really make them feel great, you know, in this situation so they can perform well, you know? And it's a trippy thing, you know, like that, being that aware of time, because I'm a space cadet, you know what I mean? Like, I love to be out of time. I love to lose myself in things and stuff. And so like, but it's cool that I found, and again, this is also like, Rick is good this way, just being able to fucking focus, you know? And I think from growing up needing, or, you know, like being an obsessive music listener, I can focus on listening. I could focus on a thing, you know? And so when making records, it's really fun. If you're making records with somebody that you're fascinated with, listening to their performance is fucking, you know, I can do that. You know what I mean? And it's, again, something I didn't think that I could do.
Yeah. I mean, I think the listening thing, this is a perfect segue, because Guitar Moves is back. Mm-hmm. And a lot has changed in the YouTube landscape since that show first came out. But I remember, and I know you just posted the Keith Richards episode again, like the brilliance of you on camera with these like legends is that you are such a cool listener, and you clearly know their repertoire, but you also let them just talk, and wherever the conversation goes, you let it go. And I think that's probably something you learned from being a producer, right?
100%, and from being a session dude, you know, for sure. I remember this, you know, like, so I'm fucking sitting with Mike Campbell, and we have guitars in our lap, and Smokey Hornbell too, big time influence on Guitar Moves. It's just like, you know, like just how that conversation goes. You know what I mean? When you're in a situation where you have guitars in your lap and you're just talking, and you have to. You're there, and you're, you know, there's something to that I think allowed me to get with these fucking heavy dudes. Cause it's happened to me before. Like, you know, the Cats, like fucking in a studio with Cat Stevens is insane. You know, like, so I had that thanks to Rick, largely thanks to Rick, just being able to jump in to this situation. And it's like an improv situation, and how do you make that compelling? And, you know, like what's cool about that? You know, and I feel like, just keep on going back to Rick, but like in those sessions, everybody's kind of in a mood. Everybody's like in a zone where it's like, okay, yeah, we're here. Like we all play music, and we all, you know, like, and we're kind of happy that we get to play music and stuff. And it's not about showing how fucking ripping you are on guitar, but it's like, I don't know. It's a thing that. It occurred to me later with the Guitar Moves. I was like, how do I pull this shit off? I was like, all right, well, I've had to sit there with the guitar in my hand with some really daunting people. And I've learned that like, it's all just about having a valuable time and recognizing that you're here and you're present, and, you know, like, and this is what we got, and we're here, and we have these guitars in our hand, you know? And so that I think is some element to the show that seems to work and is drawn on from studio experience and time, and just experience of time spent with instruments in your hand, whether or not you're playing them. You know?
How much prep do you give like a Keith Richards or a Cat Stevens? Do you say like, hey, we're going to have 2 hours of filming, we're going to cover all this stuff? Or do you just say, show up at this time? Like, how much do they know?
My pitch, it's always, again, it's so all over the place. But the general pitch is it'll take an hour of your time. We'll come to you, or we'll go wherever you want to go is the general pitch, you know? And that remains the general pitch. And then ideally I could provide a place that would be fun for them to go, if, you know, like, or just like, I think it's always funner just like wherever you're comfortable. And recording studios to me get a little boring, but I know that people love them. You know what I mean? Like, but it's fun to go, I don't know, to somebody's house, you know, and at least for guitar moves, since it's not really about gear. In fact, it's not about gear at all. You know, it's about being comfortable and having and your relationship with this instrument, you know, and among other things, but like, yeah.
Got it. And you've filmed a bunch back in the day that was like on the Vice site. Those all disappeared, but they're coming back. And then you're filming new ones now. Is that correct?
I'm going to shoot one on Monday.
Okay.
And then start going, you know, and I'm not even being cagey. I got big plans. I got a lot of people. That's where I'm at with it. I'm really excited about shooting more episodes, and I got some ideas about who I think would be good, and I've gotten some nice yeses. And we'll see how that goes. What's so cool is that I'm in charge. I partner up a Fat Possum, you know, is backing me, and I could, as opposed to previously what it was it was, you know, for a Vice, and there was a lot of, it was what you have to do to there's a lot of back and forth about making stuff, and now it's nice, I could just kind of do whatever I want. And so what had happened was the Guitar Moves episodes took off on YouTube, you know, like they eventually, the licensing things, because there's little bits of music and stuff, when the licensing things go away, God, it's so boring. There is an intern whose job it is to find that out and take the video down, you know? And so that just started happening with all these Guitar Moves videos. And I realized that there was nobody really owned it. And it turned out there was some piece of paper that sort of indicated that maybe Vice owned it. And it was like this, so boring, but I really, it was frustrating because I was like, well, I do own it, and you know, I should have it, and it should be an organized YouTube channel. And it took like 4 years to get all of those episodes back. And so what's happening today actually is the first episode, and you know, we haven't really recut stuff, but the Keith one is both that was a two-parter. It's in one thing, and we're just going to be rolling out all of these episodes that were unavailable and for the last couple of years. And then in the new year, start rolling out new episodes. And beyond that, I don't have any big plan, you know, like what's so cool is that people like the show. And what's really cool is that a lot of these old episodes weren't available. People really like them. The show has this life of its own, and people like it, and available again. And also just chopping up the things was really fun. Cause I, you know, like, and chopping them into little bites, it works pretty well. So it sort of feels fresh. These old things feel kind of like relevant now, you know?
Oh yeah. They were filmed great. I mean, yeah, you guys did a great job.
Yeah. And I'm still using Andrew Royland, who plays guitar in Le Savvy Fav. He's the editor who I think is like, it has so much to do with Andrew's pacing, because the edits are really like that kind of humorous conversational thing is really helped with the cutbacks and stuff like that. And how Andrew paces it. So it's me and him right now.
Does he film too, or you have another?
Yeah. But I'm just putting these, you know, like it's actually a surprising amount. We did a shit ton of clips, you know, like of going through all the old stuff and just like redoing it. So he's always going to be the editor. And my friend Jordan Radaley is probably going to will shoot a lot of them. You know, I'm going to have friends direct them, and people that I've worked with before, and people who I love, like, are going to do them, and we'll see. And it's, again, really cool that Fat Possum is like, yeah, just let us know what you need and let us know who you want to hire and we'll shoot it, you know? And there's also some other friends have been very, very actively supportive of like, whatever you want to do, you could come here and do it and stuff. So I don't want to fuck anything up. So that's why I'm being a little better. But I'm looking forward to it. It's cool. It was such, totally fucking accidental. I had no idea that this thing would turn into anything. I just wanted to do a cool thing based off of the BBC How to Play Guitar thing that was from the early 80s with Richard Thompson and Michael Schenker and Ron Wood. Have you seen that shit?
Yes, yes.
That's the
origin story. Okay.
Yeah. And so, the origin story is me and Jesse Pearson, who was the Vice's old editor, who was a brilliant dude and a finger picker, 500 years ago at the beginning of YouTube, that video was up, and me and Jesse were like, that video is sick. Let's do a show that has that. Like, cause it's when Richard Thompson's like, here's how you do this. Here's how you do this. Here's how you do that. It's like, nobody fucking ever tells you that shit. Like, hang your thumbs, like really simple four things. And I thought that it was brilliant. You know, like I was like, Jesus, if I saw that, that would really have given me a big jump ahead. That was my feeling at the time. So I get to fucking meet Richard Thompson in like 2006, seven, something like that, at McCabe's 50th anniversary. It was insane. And Super Wolf got asked to play. It was awesome. And Odetta was playing, you know, like, just fuck. And Richard Thompson, I've never met Richard Thompson, you know, and I'm like, I know just what to say to him to make him not come. I could just say, I love that BBC guitar thing. Cause it was such a generous and humble thing that he did, you know, like, and so I was like, I say that to him and he's like, fucking hate that thing. It's the most fucking embarrassing fucking thing I've ever done. I hate it. I hate it. The one with Michael Schenker. Yeah. I hate that. Yeah. And so I was like, I guess I got to do it. I definitely have to do the show now. My goal is to get him on. But like, it was so wild. It was like the fucking American Werewolf in London. Like, what's that pentagram on the wall? You know, like, it's like needle scratch. You know, just like, it was so bad. It was so harsh. And he's like, you know, he's God, which is fucking Richard Thompson, you know? So that really was the origin story was like, okay, I have to do something because Richard Thompson hates what he did. And I know for a fact that it's really valuable. And there's this giant, obvious thing that we can do. That's what me and Jesse were like, well, let's do it. So we actually shot a bunch of episodes that never got shown. And Jesse quit Vice. And I was also like, oh, well, I just wasted all these people's. I did it with Marnie Stern, with Paul Major, and I think with Cass McCombs. Long time ago. And then they didn't do anything with it. This is, again, before Vice was big and all this stuff. And then they came back at me saying, hey, we're sorry that, you know, you shot these episodes that we never used. We just partnered up with D'Addario and we have a budget. And would you like to do the show? You know, that's how, and then I was sort of like, okay. You know what I mean? Like, so it was always like a slightly contentious back and forth between the host program, but you know, I'm lucky as fuck. And it's all because of this guy, Jesse Pearson, who got the show started and then it puttered along and then got a life on YouTube, you know?
Yeah. Like, now that you're kind of like calling all the shots, I'm guessing you get to be a little more eclectic in your choices if you want to be, right?
Whatever the fuck you want. It's really crazy. And that's the thing is like, I could do anything, you know. I would like it to be something that anybody could watch. You know what I mean? I really want it to be that, you know, like whether you like it or not, or whether it's you know, we can definitely talk for the next 12 hours about who would be great.
Yeah.
On the show, you know, and I, And I do want it to be as eclectic and inviting as possible, you know, like, and as exciting as possible. And I'm very aware of the fact that having people of note is a part of it. You know what I mean? Is somehow a part of the show is having some resonant names. Also, I realize that a lot of them aren't like, they're all guitar players, but they're songwriters and they're singers and stuff like that. Like that's also like kind of an unspoken, but really important part for me of guitar moves is that it's not about excellence and technical, like somebody who's just like an amazing guitar player. It's not that. It's just not that. I don't know. It's somebody who could like, you know what I mean? Like
for sure.
Yeah. So, but geez, there's so many people who'd be so fucking cool, and I'm psyched that I could do. And I'm trying to figure out a way. It'll be fun to kind of get in the rhythm of it. Like, I could probably shoot episodes at my house and it'd be really good. I haven't even like decided what the pace of the thing is going to be. I'm right now just sort of booking, figuring out where to go and what to do, but it's extremely nascent.
Yeah. Well, congrats on everything, man. And you're already filming next week. I won't ask who, but that sounds awesome.
Yeah. I'm psyched. I'm super psyched.
Well, Matt, thank you. This was amazing.
Thanks so much for what you do, man. It's really extremely special, and you know, it really Fretboard Journal inspires so many people in so many ways, and it's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, that was my chat with Matt Sweeney. Go check out Guitar Moves now. It's held up remarkably well. It's such a cool show, and I'm so excited to see what he's up to next. Our next few episodes are some of my favorite of the whole year, so hopefully you're subscribed to the podcast. If you like it, please, please, please leave us a review over on Apple Podcasts. Happy holidays.